So I was not selling anything that looked like my work. Even when I was still freelancing, I was just like, yeah, it's like, you're not going to get a Never Made color palette. You're not going to get a graphic that looks like Never Made, but I could do any sort of graphic you want. And so I was freelancing like that for a while.
The Perspective Podcast is fuel for your mind and creative grind. Each week, we break down the art of healthy hustling, overcoming the inner critic, and growing your creative business. What's going on? You're listening to episode 179 of the Perspective Podcast. I'm your host, Scotty Russell of Perspective Collective, and my mission is to help you grow a fulfilling, profitable, and sustainable creative side hustle. At the end of each episode, I plug a listener of the week, so stick around to figure out how you can get a permanent shout out on a future episode. What's your definition of success, and how do you know when you've made it? What if you hit your big target, yet you truly never make it? Because there's always another bigger, better target to aim for. And this is the motto for today's new featured fam of the podcast. You've never truly made it. Keep going. We've linked up with the homie, Francisco Reyes, the mastermind behind the alias Nevermade. And describing this dude's journey as inspirational is simply an understatement. By day, he works under Shepard Fairey at Studio Number One, you know, which is cool enough as is. But once he clocks out, that's where the magic happens. That's where he combines his design skills with a heavy dose of grit to create limited runs of merch and art that pack a powerful message. His side hustle pursuits have landed in big time collabs with the likes of the Hundreds, Obey Clothing, Red Bull, the Los Angeles Clippers, I wish it was the Lakers, Disney, Zoomies, and Urban Outfitters, just to name a few. And in today's episode, we're about to go deep on the value of hard work and earning it. How to make enough noise to be seen in a non-sleazy way, creating meaningful work that makes an impact, planting seeds and speaking things into existence, selling merch, creating for yourself, and so much more. If you're ready to roll up your sleeves, do the work, and play the long game, you're going to dig this episode. And you can find the show notes and a video of this conversation over at perspective-collective.com/179. And please do me a favor. This show grows because of people like you spreading the good word by sharing a screenshot or a video of you listening or working to this in the background. And do this by just tagging me and Nevermade on Instagram stories so we can connect and I can reshare the love back. For real, it's because of you the show keeps growing and finding new people because you keep sharing it. So as always, keep an open mind and act on anything that inspires you today. Let's go. PC family, I am pumped to welcome Francisco Reyes Jr. of Nevermade to the show today. Welcome to the Perspective Podcast, brother. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of your work over the last couple of years since I saw you were a part of the Crop Cons, you know, like the satellite pop-up thing. That's what put you on your radar. And as we're recording this right now, you know, shit's kind of hitting the fan with the Black Lives Matter movement, and that made me just respect you even more. With the stance and the activism and stuff that you've been taking, I'm like, damn, this dude kicks out killer work and isn't scared to hide behind what he believes and shares that. So, yeah, for those who don't know about you and your work, you know, give us a brief Wikipedia page summary so we can catch people up.
My name is Francisco Reyes Jr. I'm a artist and graphic designer from Los Angeles. Professionally, I've been doing graphic design for about 10 years, but unprofessionally, it's been about 20. That's like early years of learning programs in high school and college, and then not having work after college. And then I have a day job now. I work for Studio Number One, which is Shepard Fairey's design agency. I've been there for about 10 years now. I've been working under him for a minute. And yeah, like I've always been into political, like protest stuff, especially being a fan of his work and just working with him for so long. It's just kind of like, it's hard not to be influenced by, you know, by his activism and the way his work has a message. And it's just, again, like it was something I was already into, but like now working at such close proximity with him, it's just like by osmosis, it's just like automatic.
It amplifies it.
Yeah, on that level. So, you know, I'm Mexican, so, and I grew up in LA, and all of my classmates were black and brown kids. So, you know, for me, it's just like, it's important for me to stand up with my peoples, you know, and use my talent and my voice to really put a message across out there, you know? And I feel like right now is the time to be open about these sort of issues, because you're gonna be remembered for what side you were on. Even if you're like neutral or quiet or whatever, people are gonna remember that. Yep. And there's a lot of artists and a lot of brands, a lot of designers that are just haven't, you know, showed any solidarity. And I'm kind of just like, damn, like, I thought you were cool, but then like, it's just like, nah, there's something that is hindering you from speaking out. And that's just kind of like corny to me. Like, these are human rights, you know? And it just kind of, your silence is just speaks volumes.
Human rights shouldn't be a political issue.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's not really political. That's just like, this is how it should be.
I'd do it for whoever, you know?
Yeah.
If it was Asian Lives Matter or, you know, Purple Lives, anything, like, it's just like, I don't know. It's an interesting time. And it's really cool. It's been really invigorating and inspiring, but it's also been very like daunting, like mentally, you know, because it's just like bombarded 24/7 with new, like the news cycle is just constant, and then social media, and then it's just like, I want to keep up with everything, but I got to keep my sanity also.
Well, and you have a business as well, and a side hustle, and a job, and family.
I have a wife. No kids yet.
Yeah, but still, it's like there's a lot of other things that need your energy too in life. So I totally get it. It's hard to just, you know, mainstream media, especially anyway, is going to suck that energy dry. Yeah. But so the intention behind your work today, you know, I know you do some client work and you do this, but would you say like, what is the main intention behind your work? And then who's your work for?
My main intention with my work is just to inspire, first of all, everybody, but mainly, like, not mainly, but I would like for, like I said, like black and brown kids from the hood to really look at me as kind of like a beacon of somebody that came out of the same neighborhoods that they did, and that there's actual alternatives to just, you know, like construction and, you know, just like me, not mediocre, but just like blue collar jobs. Like, you know, you can get a job doing graphic design and what people call like drawing for a living or doodling, because, you know, there aren't a lot of people that look like me that are, you know, up on these platforms, like, doing what I do as far as like being a creative and stuff. So, you know, I really want to inspire the younger, like, inner city youth to know that there is a way out of the hood with art and creativity. And I'd like for my work to be kind of, you know, a beacon for them. I don't like to say role model because, you know, I have my flaws and I don't want to be held to some sort of crazy standard or whatever, like, but a means for them to see like that somebody that looks like them or came from the same neighborhood as them, that there is a way out, you know, besides either just getting like a regular job that you hate or fucking joining a gang or something, you know?
And see why I asked that, because a lot of people don't know why they roll out of bed in the morning to do what they do. They lack that kind of like driving force. And yeah, a lot of it's fun, like working with Bobby Hundreds or, you know, the dope little collabs that you get to do. I think that's like a byproduct of when you actually like have something you can sink your teeth into that actually like means something that creates for some impact. And I think all the like the glory and the accolades, I think that's a byproduct that kind of comes with pursuing work that actually means something.
Yeah, like, because of the type of work I put out is the reason why a Bobby Hundreds would hit me up, or, you know, whoever else, or just like, yo, this guy is of the community. He makes stuff that aligns with our company. Like, why not work with them, you know? And Bobby says in his book, This is not a t-shirt. At the end, there's like a Q&A thing that he does. And people are always constantly asking him to collab with him. Like, they're like, yo, like, how do I get a collab? How do I get a collab?
Making it about them.
Yeah. And he's just like, just do the work. And then if you're doing the work and you're making enough noise for me to hear, it'd be stupid for me not to ask you for a collab, you know? Mm. And I feel that because, like, I never asked. I never, like, went out of my way to be like, hey, dude, I have a brand. I want a collab, you know? Like, he came by my booth at Agenda one year, and he liked my stuff, and he was just like, this is really cool, dude. I was like, thanks. And it was the first time I met him. The next day, he sent me a DM. He was like, hey, dude, it was really nice meeting you. We should do something together. I was like, what the hell? Like, hell yeah.
Wild. Starstruck. Sure, let me check my schedule.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I could pencil you in. And I get that a lot too now, because people have discovered me from some of these collaborations that I've done. And then they're just like automatic, like, yo, what's up with the collab? And I'm just like, first of all, I don't know you. And that's like the big one, because I've collabed with people that I don't know. And it just didn't work out. Like, don't do business with people like you don't know personally, you know? There needs to be some sort of like cross-pollination here where we could both benefit from a collaboration. It's not just like, yo, give me a collab because I want some clout, you know? Like, and it's just like, it's kind of corny when people ask for that. And I feel his pain. I mean, it's not even on the level that he gets, but it's just like, I'm sure it's something that he's had to navigate very carefully.
I feel like right there, big tip for your personal brand or whatever the hell you're doing, you know, don't be sleazy and don't just try to take from people. You know, don't ask like what you can do for me. It's like, hey, how can I provide you value? That's how, you know, or that's how win-win mutual beneficial relationships are going to happen.
There's different ways of doing it. You're like, hey man, can I help you pack orders or something? Or
like get the relationship going at least.
Exactly. People are just so blunt, like right away. They're just like, yo, what's up? I have a brand. Let's collab. Especially on Instagram. You should see my DMs, man. It's crazy.
I could only imagine. Shit. Yeah. How I get it is people are like, hey, can I be on your podcast? You know, like, I'm like, well, how are you going to serve my audience? Do you know who the listeners are? Is like, what's the value you're providing? Or is this trying to just get on a stage to use the platform to get you some clout? So I get it. It's like, no, like, let's build a relationship first to even see if you're like the right fit.
Yeah. Like, I always tell people that they need to just keep their head down and work and grow organically and make as much noise as possible, because once you're making enough noise, people will start to hear you or see you. And that's what I always tell everybody. But everybody just sees through Instagram people's highlight reel, you know, but they don't know like the real hustle, which is dope that you have this sort of platform where you're giving people a platform to tell their backstory, you know, like, and I try to do that with like video and really try to let people know where I came from, like how I got to where I am. But sometimes people are just lazy and they don't want to click on your about section in your website. They just want to go to your Instagram, you know, they don't want to do the research.
Yeah. First thing I dug in was the about video that you had. I'm like, damn, I need an about video. Cause this dude like captured everything. I'm like, I already want him on the show, but now I'm digging for questions. Like, you captured everything that I already was looking for. And so I think that's a good pivot right now. Make as much noise as possible, because this shit's a process.
It is.
And I talk about the slow and steady grind, but let's talk about what never made means always earned, you know, and earned not given, because I vibe to that. It's a microwave society. People are looking for a fucking handout or a dream to manifest overnight.
Yeah.
And shit does not happen that way. So, like, tell us, what does never made mean? Because I think it's powerful as hell. But what I really align to, I guess I should backtrack, is that you said Never Made was never created to be a brand. It was a design alias, probably just to hide behind a little bit, to put your work out there, which that's what Perspective Collective was for me too. In case people didn't like Scotty Russell, they didn't need to know who I was. So if they didn't like my work, they didn't need to tie it to me. And then it evolved into something so much more. So like, tell like the origin stories of Never Made, what it means, and then what it's evolved into today. Cause I think it's great for people to see like the process of like, just cause you start with something, you know, there's room to grow it.
Yeah. Well, never made what, yeah. What it means is like, you know, when people are just like, yo, you made it, like you made, you hit the top of whatever hill you're trying to get to the top. You're trying to get to the top of. And for me, I've always been very goal oriented. It's just like, okay, once you reach that goal, it's like, okay, what's next? What comes after that? So it's just more of a motivator. Like, okay, say I did a collab with Obey Clothing, right? And that was like a big dream of mine. And then it's just like, all right, dope. Like I got to this goal. Who could I, like, who would be cool to collab with next? And it was just like, oh, like Huff or the Hundreds or whoever like these peers, not peers, but people I looked up to like in the industry for so long. And then the Hundreds thing happened. It's just like, dang, now I'm here. Like, what can I do next? And it's just like, all right. And then the Clippers thing, or the LAFC thing happened. It's just like, dang, I'm here now. What can I do next? And then the Clippers thing happened, you know? So Never Made is just like, dude, like, just like when you make it, when you accept that you've made it, you get stagnant and you get complacent.
You've capped that potential.
Yeah. Like you just, like people are just like, yo, I made it. Cool. Like I'm coasting. It's just like, I never want to get to that point, because once you get to that point, you stop innovating and you stop wanting more. So that's pretty much what it means. And it just comes from just like, you know, the way my parents raised me and how my parents were immigrants from Mexico. They came illegally. And they made a life for themselves here in the United States. And then eventually they got their citizenship and, you know, they're full US citizens. But it's just like that is just like part of me, like that drive, like, you know, they both, like they met here in the States, they didn't come together, but they both are two people that took that initiative. They're just like, there needs to be more for me than what I could get in this country, which was Mexico. And then they, you know, crossed the border and then came to a country where they didn't know the language, where they didn't know anybody. And then it's just like, how do you build on that? And what they've done in this country is like truly the American dream, because when they came here, they were just living in, you know, apartments and stuff, this and that. Then they met each other, got married, and we were living in really small apartments, but they always progressed. It was just like, all right, we're going to get a little bit of bigger apartment, then we're going to get a bigger apartment. And then they finally saved up enough to get a house, and then they got a house, and then they finally saved up a little more and got a bigger house. And it's just like, it's constant, you know? And it's just like, it's just, like I said, it's just what I'm made out of, you know?
And people complain that side hustles are just like pursuing their own dream or starting freelance. It's just so hard. But then look at that story of your parents. I'm like, you're going to tell me that just showing up when it's not convenient to focus on something that's important to you, like that's not worth it to you? And I guess that's kind of the message I want to drive home on this show. Are you still grinding out of your garage too with this brand?
Yeah.
Like tell a little bit, because your shit is just gritty, handmade, and earned. You've earned the clout and respect. If nothing's been handed to you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Yeah. So this whole thing was just, like you said earlier, it was just a design alias that I started. It went through a couple iterations. Like it was first called Dream Digital. And that was just like, that was like probably in like 2007 or something like that, or maybe earlier. No, 2007-08, when I started to see some of the designers that I really liked, they were producing work under aliases, and I was like, "Damn, I want an alias." So I made up the name Dream Digital, and it was kind of the little corny way. The corny meaning behind it was that people's dreams now are coming true through digital media, you know? So it was just like, if you're grinding, like, you know, and you're putting your stuff out in the ether, this digital world, that your dreams are potentially could come true. And I had a sticker that said Dream Digital, never established, 2000 and whatever. And then, and I was still Dream Digital when I started working for Shepard, and I would post my stickers around the studio. Like, I'd walk around, and I guess he saw one one day. He's like, "Is that your?" He's like, "That Dream Digital sticker is yours, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "I really like the Never Established." He was like, "You should run with that." And I was like, "Fuck!" Like, if he said, if Shepard Fairey's telling me like, "Yo, run with that, drop the Dream Digital," like, I was like, on it. So then I started using Never Established, and then I started to establish a bit of a following under that name. And then I got hit with a cease and desist because somebody owned Never Established, and they built, but their company wasn't called Never Established. It was a company that had the trademark for Never Established. So when I ran through the internet and like Googled it, I was like, dude, like, this doesn't exist. Like, I'm going to use it. And so I did. And then they built up a case and they sent me a fat, like, cease and desist, like, thing. And they were just like, oh, because you work in the clothing industry, it was a brand that owned it. Like, because you work in the similar world as us, you knew about us, and your use of Never Established was malicious. And I was like, what the fuck? I never even heard of you guys.
Dude, I'm working out of my garage as a side hustle.
And so then, luckily, you know, we have a lawyer in house at work. And I was just like freaking out, and I was like, yo, I got this cease and desist. What do I do? She's like, do you want to fight it? Or do you want to get them off your back? I was like, I want these people to leave me alone. Like, I'll drop the name. But she wrote out like a quick little response, and I sent it to them, and they were like, all right, cool. But now I'm just like, Dan, I had created all this traction under the Never Established name. So then I was just like, all right, I need to come up with a new name. It's got to either have Never in it or Established. So I was just kind of just trying to find out what to do. And I finally landed on Never Made. And I was like, damn, that's even better than Never Established. So I was like,
because Established is long as fuck. I hate Perspective Collective for that very reason. I'm like, it's all got to be condensed font, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
During that whole process, the lawyer chick at work was like, you know, next time you're going to do this, there's a website called USPTO.gov. She's like, go on there, and you could, if there's a search engine that you type in your name, it'll tell you if it's available or not. So as soon as I came up with the name, and that's a big tip I give a lot
of huge tip. I'm writing that down right now. Yeah,
I give a lot of young designers that tip, because everybody thinks they got to go to like LegalZoom or some sort of trademark lawyer, and they're just doing that. They're going to USPTO.gov, and they're charging you whatever their retainer charges, like for the hour, which is probably like $150 an hour or whatever. And they're literally going on USPTO.gov, and they're searching your word search, and then it'll tell you, nope, available, no, blah, blah, blah. And then they offer you to do all the paperwork. There's a grip of paperwork behind it, and it's probably like, in the end, you're gonna spend like about $3,000 on trademarking your name. But anyway, that's just a tip for young designers and brand owners out there. So I checked that website, and I was like, please don't be taken. And I typed it in, and it was just like, nothing was there. And I was like, boom, I started the application. And then I was like, all right, I'm Never Made from here on out, like officially, legally, everything.
It's catchier too.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, that was like the origins of the name. Sorry, I kind of just went off. I forgot.
It's all good, man. People want to know the story. Because like, basically you're saying like, this first attempt didn't work. The second attempt didn't work. Third attempt, finally, it stuck. So it's like, you know, if shit just hits the fan one time, you don't throw in the towel.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. And I was just like, nah, man, I got to keep this going. So then I did that. And then people were just like, we like your work regardless of what moniker you use, you know? So I started using that. And then I got into the pin game pretty early. Like, you know how enamel pins are like super popular right now?
Everything now. Yo, everyone wants to make a pin
in
the shop.
I had started really early on that. And Urban Outfitters was just like getting like hip to it, and they were just like, yo, you're one of the OG makers, let's get your pins in the shop. And I was like, all right, cool. So then that was the genesis of Never Made becoming an actual like business and retail and stuff. Cause I was just selling my art on my website. It was just, I had a big cartel. I was selling my prints and that was it. Like,
and posting work on like Instagram as like the main kind of lead.
Exactly. But I wasn't doing t-shirts cause I never wanted to be seen as a t-shirt brand, because once you're seen as a t-shirt brand, you can't come back from that. Like, you're seen as a brand. And so whatever you try to do that's anything beyond a t-shirt, people are just like, why are you trying to do that? You're a t-shirt brand. Like,
stay in your lane.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it was just like, I want to establish myself as an artist and a designer and develop a visual language that then I could turn into merch. But first, I got to do all the footwork before I get there, before anybody could say, oh, he's just a t-shirt brand or whatever.
What's the footwork? And why I'm asking is because so many creatives and students that I work with are like, I want to do merch. And I'm just getting started off with my brand. I'm like,
yeah.
Where's the strategy, the voice and the style, the message, the audience? You know, what's the footwork mean to you?
The footwork is working for other people, freelancing, developing a style, not necessarily your style yet, but just, well, actually developing your style. I'll take that back. Developing your style and just grinding it out on Instagram and letting people know that this is your aesthetic, right? So I was doing that for a minute and I was selling a couple prints and stuff. And yeah, it's just really, really kind of organically trying to create your brand of art. You know, I call it like, I'm trying to develop a visual language that's just like that. Once you look at, like, you could see, you could tell, but like, that's a never made graphic. That's a Francisco.
Never made, graphic, made that. You know? Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh yeah, that's for sure. Like, you know, so it's just kind of just the footwork is developing yourself and your style and your work ethic and just like, you know, working for that goal. Like, I mean, there's no real like map or blueprint.
You got to put in the work and the answers kind of reveal themselves slowly over time with opportunities that you didn't expect.
Yeah, totally.
Basically, it's like you got to put in the time and the grind to develop your visual language, your style, yourself, and slowly start putting prints and things along the way. Like, you didn't, as soon as you got started, you weren't just making prints and killing it.
No, not at all. I was like, if you go back to my Instagram, to the very first post, because my Instagram that I have now is still the one that was Dream Digital. And then went from, and then it went to Never Established, and then it went to Never Made. You could see that progression. So if you go, the first post I actually did was, I didn't know how Instagram worked early on. So it was just like a picture of my bike that I rode to the beach. Cause I was like, oh, I thought this app was just like a photo filter app.
My shit was of my cats. I get it.
Yeah. But I keep all that stuff. So people have a record to be like, oh, dang, look, like, because people won't scroll that far these days. Like before, like if I'm really trying to research somebody, I go all the way back. I'm like, let's see what your style was before. Like, oh, okay. Okay, I see where you were at. I see how you got to where you are now.
It's like a visual journey and journal, I mean, of people's stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then throughout my whole thing, I talk about how like Dream Digital is dead. It's Never Established. And then it's like a couple, like a year or two of Never Established stuff. And it's just like never. And I scratched out the EST and I was like, unfortunately I got to change my name. And then a couple weeks later, it's just like, boom, Never Made. And then it's just been that ever since, you know? And that's another thing I tell a lot of young designers that, and I notice it a lot, is like a lot of these people are just copying their favorite designers and then putting a price tag on it and then selling it on their Instagram because they're trying to make money or they're trying to get some sort of recognition. And it's just like, I've seen so many people just pretty much rip off like concepts that I've already done. And then they just use it, my color palette, and then are just like for sale, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, dude, this is the reason why I stopped freelancing, because once, before I was freelancing and I was just like, yo, what do you need? They're like, well, then they're sending me like a mood board. But like, yeah, I could do that. And then I started to develop my own style for myself. And then people were hitting me up. They're just like, yo, I want that. I'm like, that stuff's not for sale. Like, that's that stuff's for me, because if I sell you that, you're going to make money off of that. And then it's just going to dilute what I'm trying to eventually get to as far as like a visual language goes. So I was not selling anything that looked like my work. Even when I was still freelancing, I was just like, yeah, it's like, you're not going to get a Never Made color palette. You're not going to get a graphic that looks like Never Made, but I could do any sort of graphic you want. And so I was freelancing like that for a while. So yeah, they're over here just like I said, they're young designers. They're seeing people with merch and websites, and they're just like, oh, this guy killed it as a freelancer or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they're just like jumping into it, and boom, they want it done right away, where like, it's just like, yo, learn to be a graphic designer, because learning programs doesn't make you a graphic designer. You got to go to school for that. You got to, or learn from somebody. Is just like, you have to learn how to see things. You have to learn typography. You have to learn, you know, the balance between positive and negative space. And there's a lot that goes into being a graphic designer other than the technical side. It's just like, that's just a tool. A graphic designer is like how you see things, you know? And I don't think people need to go to college anymore, because I'm in fucking super debt because of it. But
same.
It was helpful because it taught me how to be a graphic designer. It didn't teach me programs. And I think that's what kids are learning these days. It's just like, go on YouTube. How do you make a t-shirt graphic? I thought, oh, that's easy or whatever. But there's no, I don't know. I don't know how to express it, but there's no like heart in it, I guess I would say. But yeah, these kids are just like ripping off my stuff and just putting for sale on there. And I had to check a couple of them, and I was just like, yo, if I'm going to inspire your work, cool. Change the fucking colors, man. Like, because you're stepping on my toes.
Flying way too close for the sun, man, without proper recognition or credit either.
Yeah, I'm developing this thing. I've been developing it for a while, and just for you to come in and be like, oh, screenshot, I'm going to drop the colors or whatever, and then just color my graphic in your thing, and then make it look like a fake Never Made graphic and sell it to some company. Some clothing company, and they're going to be like, oh, that's sick, and they're going to run with it, but they have no idea about me, because this graphic designer, and I've seen it happen a bunch of times.
Same.
Where just like a brand will have a graphic out, and then they'll get called out, and they're just like, we had no idea. We hired a graphic designer to do this. They apparently stole it from you. We're really sorry. We'll take it down, like, type of shit, you know? So yeah, it's just like these like young designers really need to learn how to just like be patient and then earn that clout or that recognition, instead of just ripping off everybody else's work and just trying to make a quick buck off of it.
Or not given. Man, and I want to clarify, you said something super important. Yours is like a different, I've never heard anybody from your approach say like, I'm creating this style, this visual language that I've created, and I don't want to get hired to do this. But you've already like proved my point of what I teach other students. I'm like, you're tired of having people hit you up for work, referencing everybody else's style. It's like, you just proved it. If you put in the time, the footwork, the years of building your own style, your voice, your message, and getting known for it, like, people are going to start coming to hit you up for your own style. Cause a lot of people are like, how do I track the work I want with freelance? I'm like, do the work on yourself first, you know, find your own groove.
And that's what happened. So after the whole pin thing with Urban Outfitters, like, I got recognized as a pin maker or whatever, which it was never supposed to be. I made a pin of an empty donut box, and I called it the Box of Shame. And that thing just went viral. People were just like, oh my God. Cause the graphic, the backer card was a illustration of a woman's hand taking the last donut out of the box. All you're left is just like a empty, like, pink donut box. But then I realized, I think it might be just like a California thing or an LA thing, that donuts come in this little pink box, like a little pastry box, because some people are just like, I've showed it to them, they're like, I don't get it. I'm like, oh, okay. Either way, they picked it up and it went crazy. And then I got featured on like Urban Outfitters, like their website and stuff like that. And then right after that, they were just like, hey man, we're starting to do these artist series t-shirts. and we really want you to be one of them because we really like your style. And I was like, yes, this is that point. This is that moment that I could finally do a t-shirt, and it's not me doing a t-shirt as a brand. It's me doing a t-shirt as an artist, and because it's an artist series. So they did three t-shirts with Urban Outfitters, and I did it, and they were like, we want your style for these t-shirts. And they printed a bio on the inside of the shirt, like everything. And I was just like, damn, this is it. This is exactly why I waited so long to do like a proper line of t-shirts, because if I did it on my own, people would just been like, oh yeah, he's just a never made as a t-shirt brand, but they don't know that there's a person behind it. It's a design alias, you know? So then it finally, so that I did that and I was like, okay, dope. And then they came back. They're like, dude, your shirts are crushing it. They're like, do you want to sell your brand in the stores? And I was like, well, it's not really a brand yet or at all. It was never meant to be a brand, but yeah, like let's pursue this. And so they're like, okay, send me a line sheet and you know, we'll pick some stuff out and we'll sell it in our stores. And I didn't know what a line sheet was. I was like,
Did you tell them, okay, yeah, for sure, I got this. And then I'm like, yeah, I got it. Yeah. And then what's a line sheet?
Around this time is when I got my buddy Dre to be a business partner with me, because I was still working and I was working full time still. And with the whole PIN thing, I was trying to answer emails and then trying to get the factory to make them and all this stuff. And I was just like, dude, like, this is so much work. Like, I can't do it by myself because I have a full-time job. I can't answer emails with Urban Outfitters and I can't be corresponding with the manufacturer of the pins. Like, it just was a lot. So at the time, my buddy Dre, who is now my business partner, this is the genesis of how he came into the picture. We were always in bands together. You know, that's something I forget to tell people. Like, I came from a hardcore background. I played music for years, and that's what taught me a lot of the DIY ethics that I carried over into Nevermade. And he was the bass player in my band, the last band that I had. And he had a brand, and I helped him develop graphics for it. And when I started my big cartel, and he would come over and help me put together orders, because I had no idea what I was doing. And so once this thing happened with the pins, I was like, I don't have any money to offer you for your time, but how about you come in like as a business partner and my manager, and I'll give you a slice of Nevermade as incentive, you know? And he was just like, yeah, I'm down. So he came in to help me take it to the next level, because like one person doing it all was just like impossible.
Been there, dude. It's impossible. Like, if you don't delegate the smaller shit so you can focus on the bigger picture, how you get a scale?
Yeah. And so I was like, I don't have any money. I can't pay you like for your time. Like, and we're homies, but it was just like, I know this is a lot of work. You have a family and you have a job, but if you could like answer emails and talk to and just take care of production pretty much. He was just like, yeah, man, let's do it. So then he came in with the pin thing, and then later he was already on board when the artist series thing came through. And so I sent the line sheet out to Urban Outfitters, and they picked a couple of t-shirts, but the production for that t-shirt, those t-shirts, was $18,000. And we're just like broke. Like, where are we going to get 18 grand from, you know?
Because they want to buy it like wholesale, that amount, and
big ass order.
Yeah. So you find your vendor, whatever, get it drop shipped to them.
Yeah. It was a big ass order. We're just like, oh crap. Like, what the hell do we do now? Like, and this is one of those moments in companies where it either just like, you either just stop because you're afraid, or you're just like, you go balls in and you're just like, let's do it. So he was just like, we'll figure it out. Like, we'll accept the order.
Risk it for the biscuit.
Yeah, man. Like, let's accept the order, and then we'll figure out how we get the money, you know? And our families aren't rich or anything, so I took out a loan for the 18 and paid it, and then got, it was like a net 30, so in 30 days I got the check from them, which was double of what it, I mean, the 18 grand was the production, and then I got like another 18 grand in profit, but that's what kind of.
So it was 36 total, 18 covered the loan, 30% off for taxes, and you're left with the profit, like, whoa.
Yeah. And then that was like, okay. And at first I was just funding, before that I was funding everything myself, like, because it was my project, you know. Actually, we asked a friend of ours to help us pay for that. We asked them for $800 to pay for all the pins, because they kept coming back and ordering different pins. And we're just like, oh my God. And like, we were afraid of that. Like, we were afraid of the $800, $1,000 order. And we're just like, damn. So, and then this order came in, and we're just like, this is an 18,000, like, the production's going to cost us 18 grand, like, just to make these t-shirts. We're just like, dude, this is so scary. But then we did it, and then that money finally is just like, and then it just started to recycle itself.
That money goes into the next, so you just continually just take that profit, reinvest back in the business.
Exactly. So then I stopped having to fund it myself, and we stopped having to ask people for money. We finally had enough money in the company, you know, to pay for future projects, you know. So that was like the genesis of how it got into retail. And then after that, Zoomies came in the picture, and then
it would say, yeah, flex from here in this story. Yeah. Like, flex a little bit where all your shit's at now. I'm asking for it.
And then Zoomies came in the picture, and then we still do business with Urban. It does pretty well there. I got picked up by, there's a local skate shop called Active Skate Shop, which is a pretty big shop all around here in California. Unfortunately, they just went bankrupt, but yeah, it kind of just put me on the map as like, people are just like, oh, that's a t-shirt brand, but it's ran by an artist, you know? And then that allows me to do murals and to do whatever I want as a graphic designer, because I'm not pigeonholed to t-shirts. T-shirts are just another canvas for me to put my art on, and for people to rep me, and people to see it, and people to be like, yo, that's a dope shirt. Who is that? People, oh, it's Nevermade. And then they find out that Nevermade is a design alias. You know, it's still my design alias. It's what I put under everything, but I'm designing it all.
So how long ago did the Dream Digital start? Because I want to build this timeline so people can see the grind.
Coined that in like 2008.
2008, okay. And then to 2000, so 12 years later, it doesn't happen overnight is what we want to drive home here. It's a slow and steady grind, you guys. Like, this getting popping off into these big retailers when you come from, you know, the rocks, the punk rock scene, was it punk?
Yeah, it was punk, hardcore, ska. Just like I was in the trenches with music.
And doing your own t-shirts and band posters and the logos, you know, it starts in the trenches. And then for me, from the outside looking in, summarize it, starts in the trenches. You figured it out. Oh, year by year, ran with the evolution, ran with the adversity. Adversity, this shit didn't happen to you, it happened for you, because now Nevermade just sounds way doper. And it's just like the grind and evolve. And I'm a big believer of, like, opportunities come your way if you're out there actively seeking. If you're out there working towards something, you got to believe that something is working back towards you. I mean, you're like a prime example. Like, opportunities aren't coming your way. If you wouldn't have took the risk and gone to that agenda booth, Bobby Hundreds may not have never seen you, you know? You put yourself in that position. It's like you create your own luck, and that's what I try to preach here. Don't be passive.
Yeah, no, and I'm a huge believer in the law of attraction and putting stuff into the universe.
Yes, like that, dude, yes.
I wholeheartedly believe that.
Your respect points keep going up throughout this whole conversation here.
That's how I got in with Shepherd was first an internship. I went to an art show that he had, because at student number one downstairs, we have a art gallery called Subliminal Projects. And he had an art show there. And I went one day with a friend of mine. And I was just like, it was the first time I saw his work like in person, because his art shows, like the lines to get into his shows were always ridiculous. And I managed to go like on a weekday when it was like nobody there. So
it's like going to a matinee movie.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like, oh man, like this is so dope. And I was so inspired, and I left, and it's like the corniest thing, I swear, but this is exactly how it happened. I was walking out, and I looked up at the student number one sign, and I was just like, I'm going to work here one day. I was like, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm going to work here one day. And then like literally like 4 years later, like I got an internship there through my buddy that I went to college with, who put in the word for with Shepherd for me. And yeah, I've been working there for 10 years. If you go back on my Instagram, you'll see that first day. It says, like, I'm here an hour early, and it's a picture of student number one. And that was 10 years ago already, you know? So
That's wild. No, I'm a big believer. Speak things into existence, plant those seeds, man. All about it.
It's so true. And the thing is, like, again, people aren't patient with it, because you put that out and you don't know when it's going to happen. You know, people want it to happen right away. People want everything automatic. You know, people want everything. It's just the culture that we live in now. People want things just boom to happen right away, and they want it to happen, you know, without any work. And yeah, it's lame, but then those people, like the real ones get weeded out, like from, you know, real like quick. It's like the people that are actually down with it and down for it, like they stay, because the people that just want it quick weed themselves out. That's why there's so many, everybody wants to have a t-shirt brand. Everybody wants this, and they do it backwards. They're just like, I have $15,000. I'm going to make all this merch. I'm going to have, it's going to be the next big thing or whatever, blah, blah. And then you're left with all this merch because you did not do any of the footwork before. You're just expecting people to see your stuff, like how, in whatever way you have in your head.
Cause like people aren't going to just buy a product because it's a dope looking shirt. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are, but I know a lot of people are buying shit because, one, they like Francisco, they like his message, they like his story, they've been fucking with him for years, and they've become true fans of him, his work, and his message, and that's why they're buying your shit. And it's like that connection, that loyalty, that like, know, and trust factor with people. When you share your story, your experience, my parents came from Mexico, nothing was given to me, everything was earned. Like, dude, I need something on my wall now. After this, from talking to you, you know, like I feel like I'm a part of your story because you share it, and that's how you get people to like support you.
Yeah, you are, though. Like, this is just that part of the groundwork that I'm doing now for future projects, because people don't know about me, that know about you, they're gonna be like, dang, like, who's that guy? Like, that guy sounds.
And this is a side hustle. That's the dopest part about it. Oh, you know, day job, I work under Shepherd Ferry. And then, you know, side hustle is never made. Like, that's wild. Because if people didn't know about your day job, like, I started talking about my day job so people would know. People thought Perspective Collective was the full-time thing for years. But then I started sharing more. Like, no, this is all outside of day job. This is how I make shit happen. This is my timing, my schedule. Mm-hmm. I got a family, podcast, freelance, whatever. So I think that just makes it even more concrete and real. Like, okay, this dude, what he's done isn't out of reach. He's just put in the time and invested the energy and the sacrifice, the blood, sweat, and tears, you know, because it just, nothing's handed. You got to have some adversity along the way so you can earn it and appreciate it.
Another thing I always say is just like, some people have the talent, some people have the work ethic, and some people have the passion. The people that have all three are the people that things start to happen for them. Because if you have the talent and no work ethic, you're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to have like you're talented. If you have the work ethic but no talent, then like, what are you working towards? Like, you know, you're just going to kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're kind of just going to be like stagnant. Like, you're going to be, you have that hustle, but then like, you're probably hustling for somebody else and you're not hustling for yourself. And those are people that are just like, that hate their jobs, but they have that work ethic, but they're just like, man, I wish I could be doing this and I could be doing that. Right. But they don't, because they don't have the passion for that, whatever project it is that they have, that dream that they have in the back of their head. They're just like, man, if I could, I would totally do this or whatever, but they don't, because they're afraid, because they don't have the passion for it. So those are the three ingredients that I always tell people that they need to have in order to not, because I don't consider myself successful, but to get some sort of success, you know?
Let's get some traction.
Like, for me, successful is when I'm like completely working for myself and I have a house that's paid off, and then I have my parents' house paid off, and then
the bigger driving, the whys, man, the thing that fuels you.
Yeah. And so then, and once I get there, once I do that, I'm like, okay, now what's next?
Yeah. You never fully arrive.
Never. Because once you make it, you stop innovating and you stop striving for more.
Man, there's so much gold packed into this one. Let's pivot to rapid fire questions and we'll wrap this shit up. And sometime down the road, let's get a round two set up and let's just go deep.
Yeah.
Deeper, you know? Okay, so real quick, the most serious question I've asked you all day. If you were on death row, what would your last slice of pizza be?
Oh, man, there's this pizza place that I go to right here in my hometown called Rosario's Pizza. It is just the most like cheese and pepperoni that you'll ever see on a pizza. And like all that grease just like seeps into the crust that it just makes it so damn good. It's like a lot of people are turned off by it because it's so much topping. But me and my cousin Edwin, like we're not always going there because like that'd be bad. But we're just like, that's like our pizza spot. So it'd be a slice of Rosario's pizza for sure. Pepperoni pizza.
You just put them on the map. I've never asked this one before, and I just thought of it recently. Pizza rolls, pizza bagels, or Hot Pockets?
Oh, man. I don't know. Neither. They all make me feel like shit after I eat them.
True.
But if I had to, like, I would say a Hot Pocket.
Okay, that's a fair answer. Okay. If you got to have lunch with one person dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I would probably say, like, a distant relative, like, from Mexico, because I'd like to know where our family kind of originated from, you know, like just because there's pictures of my grandfather and my grandmother when they were young, and my grandpa's got like a bullet belt around his waist with a gun, and he's like, and my grandma's just like in this like little white like dress. So I'd like to know further than that, you know. I'd like, they both passed away, so that history might be gone, but I would say that just because, like, I'd like, because, you know, they say, like, you don't know where you're going until you know, or like, where you've been. So I'd like to know a little bit more about my personal family history. So I would say something along those lines.
Word. If you were reincarnated, what would your new career path be outside of art and design? I know you had music in the past, but, like, is there something else out there, low key?
Yeah, I'd be a basketball player for sure.
Yeah. No shit. Okay. What were you point guard, shooting forward?
Yeah. I played basketball. Like, that was like my first passion was basketball.
Same. It
was like fifth grade through eighth grade. I played every single day. My aspirations were to be like the first Mexican basketball player in the NBA. And dude, and I was playing basketball in the mid 90s when basketball was like the shit.
Like, top, man. Like the Ray Allens, yes, and Kobe's and Iversons, yes, and Garnett's, Stephon Marbury's, all franchises. That, dude. Yes.
I still have my basketball cards.
Dude, my card collection is right over here and it is sick as fuck.
Yeah. Like I threw out a lot of the trash that I just had to fill up. Do you know how when we had those binders, like people were just like, oh, the thicker your binder is, like the more down you are.
Yeah. The plastic sheets of like rows of threes. Yep. Dude, my Kobe collection is wicked.
RIP Kobe, man. I threw out all like the all the crap, and I kept like all my gems. They're not very many, but you know, I had to get rid of some stuff. But I would definitely be a basketball player. And the funny thing is, like, I was so about basketball, and then I got to high school, and it was like the summer before ninth grade, and me and my best friend Mike were like, all right, let's go. We're gonna go try out for JV. We're like, all right, sick. Because we both played for the Parks around the in our city, and we walked in, dude. And like I said, I went to a predominantly black and brown school, so we walked in, and these fools were fucking dunking on each other, and like,
because you were in Compton, right? You grew up in?
Yeah. Well, I was born in Compton, and I grew up in Carson, which is literally like the next town over. So it's same people. And these fools were dunking on each other. And me and my friend Mike looked at each other. We're just like, we are way out of our league here. Like, literally.
I'm not going to go take a charge.
We're like, how about we just like go home? You're like, yeah. And we didn't try out. And then after that one I started skateboarding. And then that took me on a different path, and that kind of skateboarding is what really fueled my passion for graphic design, and that's where I got into like all my favorite like skate logos and skate graphics. I was,
like the Dark Star shit always had me. Dark Star and Blind, that was always my shit.
Dark Star was my favorite brand actually, because their logo was so sick.
All right, where can people go to follow you online and support you?
Social, I only have an Instagram, which is @nevermade, and my website is nevermade.com.
Dude, this was hella fun. I got to learn a lot more about you through this. I appreciate all the gold you dropped today, too. We'll definitely have to make round two happen if you're down.
Yeah, totally.
Word, man. Let's keep in touch. Peace. PC family, there you have it. The new homie, the new fam of the Perspective Podcast, Francisco Reyes of Never Made. Do what you do best. If you found value in what he had to say today, go blow him up on Instagram right now and share with him your biggest takeaway of what you learned from him. So thanks again, Francisco. We appreciate your time and your creative genius today. If this show has helped you along your creative grind, there are two ways you can support what we're building here. By far, the best and most helpful way is by supporting financially the backing the show over at patreon.com/perspectivepodcast, especially like my family at Iron Bean Coffee Company and Tony Minix do. I love you guys. You are the ones who make this show possible, and making sure that everybody who's brought in to help and grow this show to keep it going with my crazy schedule, that they're compensated. So that means the world to me. And the second way, this is a big way too, is just by subscribing and leaving a rating and review. Leave those reviews, please. That way I can give you a plug on the show and get you stapled in as a future listener of the week. And this week's listener of the week comes from the homie, Tim Santana of Santana Branding Co. from the US. He titles this awesome podcast for creatives. He states, Scotty is one of the most genuine, big-hearted people I've never met in person. Think of him as a personal trainer for your creative career. That's funny. There's so much value in these episodes that I legit feel like I'm stealing every time I'm listening. Tim, I appreciate it, dude, and I really appreciate how active you are in the private Facebook group over at The Perspective-Collective. And congratulations on hitting those little milestones of growing your Instagram from scratch. So appreciate you, brother. Much love to you. And as I sign off, I want to give a huge shout out and a huge thank you to my podcast editor, Anya Brennan, my executive assistant, Paige Garland, video specialist, Colton Bacher, social media coordinator, Hannah Schick, and the homie Nick Jenkins of Bluka for all the dope theme music you hear on the show. And as you finish off your week strong, I want to encourage you to keep showing up, keep putting in the work, and keep creating. You got this.